Name is Joe. I'm an alcoholic. By God's grace and because AA works, I have a sobriety date. It's April 23rd, 1981. It really impresses me. If you have cell phones, please turn them off or on vibrate. Could we please have a moment of silence and gratitude for the AA recoveries of the past 75 years? The thing I got from GSO says that I get to talk if a little bit in between speakers. Now, I firmly believe that leaders lead and speakers speak. But if they tell me I can talk at the International Convention... Our topic is turning it over, and I used to drink a little, and on March 26, 1981, my wife stayed home from work and went to work with me to keep me out of the bars because I knew I was fixing to lose my business. And after work, well, we didn't work, we went to the bars, but she called this counselor where she works to see about getting some help for her alcoholic husband who was asking for help. And this guy says, well, good, we want to talk to him, not you. And he tricked me. He got me to admit it didn't work my way. And what I was talking about is one more time I couldn't quit drinking. But he said, pack your clothes, you're going to the hospital. And I said, wait a minute, you don't understand. I don't need that kind of help. He said, well, you just told me it don't work your way. Why don't you try it ours? And that's turning it over. That's doing it a way other than mine, huh? We're coming up to the podium by sobriety, and the newcomer is Marty.
Hi, everybody. I'm Marty, and I'm an alcoholic. And, yes, when I found out I was the newcomer, I was baffled because my sobriety date is 12/12/88. But I was also thrilled. Thank you. I was also thrilled to be going first so I can get it over with, right? I'm from the Greenville, South Carolina area. My home group is the Pass It On group in Walhalla, South Carolina. And I'm delighted to be here. So, turning it over. For me, turning it over meant realizing that I was in need of help and putting down alcohol when I had never had any intention of putting down alcohol. I knew I was an alcoholic pretty much from the first time I had a drink. And I thought that was okay. In my mind and the way I was raised and sort of thought of myself, I was going to be a star. I was either going to be a famous writer or an actress, or a model, or preferably a rock star, because I thought they were the coolest. And all of those people who I looked up to who were in those roles were, I thought, alcoholics. And that just went with the job. So I didn't really think too much about the way I drank. I just drank that way, and I just had blackouts, and... woke up in places with people that I didn't know much about and thought that that was just the way my life was going to go. Ultimately, I think I also turned it over when finally a counselor said to me, look, I really think you should go to AA. And I said, well, okay, I'll try it. But I thought it was a cult. I thought it was a bunch of religious freaks. And I had grown up in church, but the only reason I really wanted to be in church was for church choir. I sang from the time I was like six until I was graduated high school. So God and things of religion had never really had much interest to me. But I went to an AA meeting, and my first AA meeting was near my house. I walked over there. I had on an awful, like, mustard-colored sweatsuit, you know, the top and the pants, so I looked, like, really coordinated. And I was bloated, and my hair was all straggly and gross. And I walked in, and a gentleman looked at me with a big smile, and he said, welcome. I don't know you. I think this must be your first time here. How could he have told, you know, how could he tell that, right? And I said, it was a step meeting, because that was the closest one to my house, and I had no clue what the steps were. And I said, well, I don't know. I'm not on the steps. I don't really know what I'm doing here. I'm not sure I'm in the right place. And he just looked at me, and he said, oh, honey, you're in the right place. So I immediately felt at home. That meeting was up in Boston, actually outside of Boston, Massachusetts, and that was where I got sober. I had grown up in the Midwest and drank and drove a lot. I think there were more cows than there were people, though, so fortunately I didn't hit anyone or any animals. But I was bound and determined to continue to drive and drink and drive, and fortunately I didn't have a car in Boston, so it was a good place for me. After I went to meetings, I started to listen, and I started to hear. And there's something I want to just mention out of the big book on page 62, at least in my version. It says, this is the how and why of it. First of all, we had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, we decided that hereafter, in this drama of life, God was going to be our director. So, it took me a while to really understand that concept, but when I did, it was a lot of relief, because I thought that I had to be in control. I thought that I had to be the one to always play God, always tell other people what to do, always judge other people. I thought I had to really figure my life out. And what I found was that to turn over my life, which I've been learning about in my whole time in sobriety, that faith is essential. Faith in something other than myself. And for me, that meant faith in a higher power who I choose to call God. I guess because I'd been in church so much, the word God, you know, just worked for me. And so I haven't really had a problem with that. So turning it over, you know, what is it? It, I've learned, is my will and my life, as it says in the third step. My will, my sponsor tells me, is my thinking, and my life is my actions. And so I've also come to realize that I don't really turn it over, just throw things out to the air. I mean, this is about having a relationship with God and asking for help and realizing that God will take anything that I can't handle if I'm already communicating with God, if I already have that path that my willingness has started to open. I have to apologize. I keep looking down here. I realize I'm the only one who brought up notes, a big book, a 12 and 12. I think that's because I have less sobriety than my others. And so I'm looking down because I'm cheating with my notes. And I'm also, I heard a speaker earlier talking about how she was a student. Always in life. And I'm that way too. Last night I was preparing for some of this, and my husband in our hotel room, I wanted him to turn the TV off and stop, you know, bugging me because I couldn't focus on writing my notes. And he said, Marty, this is not school. And I treat everything kind of that way. That has helped me because I'm willing to learn, and I'm also willing to admit I'm wrong. And I've realized in turning it over that a lot of that has to do with willingness. It has to do with being willing to have a communication with God, and that it says also, you know, we hear if we take that key of willingness, it opens the door just a little bit. Now, I may turn something over today, and tomorrow I've taken it back again. So that door has slammed shut. But every time I turn something over, I get a little more comfortable with that process, a little more comfortable with letting it go quicker. So what I'm going to talk about now is leave the notes a little bit and be a bit more direct, a bit more from the heart. After I came into that first meeting, I stayed in AA for probably 4 or 5 years. During that time, I had a bunch of sponsors. They kept moving, and I thought, well, what is it, me? You know, of course it was all about me, and they were moving to get away from me. But they kept moving, and then I kept getting a new sponsor. But one sponsor who was around for a while took me through the first 5 steps. And now, this is not to say anything negative about that sponsor. I know that she's still sober to this day. But she then sort of said, well, that's it. Or that's what I think she said. I may have heard, you know, intentionally. But anyway, I got through the first 5 steps, and step three made a lot of sense to me. Okay, turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understand Him. I'm not going to talk too much about God as I understand Him, because that's kind of a whole another big topic. But I went to meetings for about 5 years. Then I went back to school. I started working in a career that I was very excited about and that I thought that, you know, I had been avoiding for many, many years. And I decided, well, I don't need meetings so much. As a matter of fact, I really liked something that I heard some people saying for a while. So I heard a guy say, you know, I didn't get sober to just sit in meetings. And I thought, yeah, that's right. I got sober to pass this gift on. But I only realize that now. So at that time, I went back to school. I got into this career that I am still in to this day, and I stopped going to meetings. And I stopped having a sponsor because, of course, they kept moving, and I got tired of that. And I stopped praying, and I stopped doing any steps, and I stopped reading, and I thought I was fine. So what I did, in essence, is I took back, I think, everything that I had turned over, or I gave away my sobriety, and I got really, really crazy. You know, I heard it again in a meeting this morning that it's no longer about drinking. After a while, it's not about I go to these meetings because I need a drink today or want a drink today. It's about changing my life and changing my behavior. I have always had an alcoholic personality. I probably always will have an alcoholic personality unless I do the work, which for me is the steps, to change that personality. But I didn't know that then. And so what I did was I stopped going to meetings probably for a good 8 or 9 years. Let's see, 8, 5, 6, 7, 8. Okay. And I got really crazy. Also during that time I was in a relationship where I was being very, very taken care of. And I thought that was, again, what was okay for me. I was completely dependent on this other person. Notice those two words, dependent and person. That's important when I move on in a minute here. I didn't go to meetings. I got very crazy. I was fearful. It got to the point where I couldn't look at myself in the mirror without hating what I saw. I couldn't answer the door if I was home during the day and the doorbell rang. I would, like, crawl on the floor under the windows and peek out to see who was there. I had a job where I was going to my own office. There was no one else there, and I would go there all day long with my dog. Thank God for my dog. And spend the whole day there doing very self-indulgent work. I'm an artist, and so I would just do my artwork all day long and go home, and I wasn't thinking about anybody else. I wasn't making plans for anyone else or with anyone else, and my life got very, very small and very, very full of fear. And I somehow realized I need to go back to AA. I think I listened to God. I turned over what I was doing because at that point the fear got greater than the pain. Actually, no, it's the opposite of that. The pain was greater than the fear for me. The pain of living the way I was living was greater than the fear of making a change. I had been afraid to look at the relationship I was in, to look at the way I was living. I had been so fearful that I didn't want to make that change. Well, that became too painful for me. So, what I did, and this is important, I did not drink during that entire time. And I don't really know why, because I kept planning to drink. It was like, okay, when I do this project, I'll drink. When I finish this project, I'll drink. When I finish this bicycle ride, I'll drink. And I didn't. So I think something had worked in those first five steps. Somehow or another, in the third step, when I said, I'm going to turn this stuff over to God, I had turned over my desire to drink, but I hadn't turned over anything else. I didn't realize that it wasn't just drinking I was turning over. It was everything. It was the people I cared about. It was my life. It was my career. It was everything. That's what it is when we talk about turning it over. So I was really into therapy, and I went back to this therapist before I went back to meetings. And she said, I told her I was a recovering alcoholic. And she said, oh, good. How much time do you have? And I said, oh, I'm not sure. I think about maybe 15 years, something like that. And she said, what step are you on? And I said, oh, I did those a long time ago. And she said, well, do you have a home group? And I said, no. And she said, well, when did you last go to a meeting? And I said, oh, maybe, I don't know, 5 years ago, maybe. And do you have a sponsor? No, she moved. And so this is on the first intake with this therapist, and she looked right at me and she said, I will not work with you unless you get your tail back to Alcoholics Anonymous and then come and see me. Well, you know what? God put me in that chair across from this woman because she saved my life. I was willing somehow to say, okay. So I went to a meeting. I was so uncomfortable, I couldn't stay. I walked out. I went back to the therapist's office, and I said, I went to a meeting, but I couldn't stay. I got too uncomfortable, and I walked out. And she said, go back to another one. So I did, and ultimately I realized what I had been missing. It took me a long time of crying and being very, very fearful. But I got a sponsor, and I got a home group. And it was up in Massachusetts, and a number of my home group friends are sitting right over there. And the sponsor I had kept saying to me, Marty, jump and the net will appear. I know that's not anywhere in AA literature, and she's about this tall. Right? And I said, you know, it's easier for you to jump. You don't have as far to fall as I do. But I believed her. Somehow or another, I believed her. And what that meant was, it's not a net. It's God. God appeared. Yesterday, I was in the big the conference center, and I was saying hi to people. There was this gentleman I said hi to, and he was from Quebec, and he spoke some English, and I spoke a teeny little bit of French, and so we sort of, you know, went back and forth, and he gave me this band, and it says, my French is not very good, but it says, Dieu me porte, God carries me. And I just got chills when he handed me that, because God does carry me. So back to willingness and willpower. I think that the other thing that I've learned in turning it over is, as it says in the 12 and 12, it's not about giving up our willpower completely. It's about using our will in the right way and aligning our will with God's will. That was really important for me, and I bet a few of you have had this same feeling. I'm going to do it my way, right? Well, what I heard was that, you know, we talk about the hole in the donut. I'm not going to be that hole in the donut if I turn everything over to God. What that dependence on God does for me, for this alcoholic, is it allows me to be actually more independent because I'm not relying on a person. I'm not relying on an idea of who I should be that is too narrow for me to sort of define myself. I'm not relying on some material thing. I'm relying on the grace of God and the plans that God has for me, which are so much greater and so much bigger than I could have ever come up with. When I'm not turning it over, I have a little admission here, I tend to be the kind of person who needs to figure it out. Now, I have a friend who was up in Boston, and I used to call her and I'd say, I got to figure this out. And she said, Marty, where is the slogan on the wall that says, figure it out? You know, and I said, oh, there isn't one. And I think that I'm going to, how much more time do I have, Joe? How am I doing? 2 minutes. Excellent. I think I'm going to end with this. You know, that's where I continue to struggle in this whole turn it over thing. I have a tendency to want to figure it out. Well, if I can't figure it out, before I turn it over, I want to know what's next. Right? I want to know, well, if I turn this over, I'll have this in its place. It's that gray area. It's that emptiness that still scares me. And, well, sobriety is progressive. I just heard that. And I have some work to do in this area still. But I think that, you know, that's okay. That's okay. Being willing to recognize that I'm still struggling with turning it over sometimes, and that I don't always have to figure it out. That sometimes I can just say, you know, God's got this. And because I have experience with successful turning it over, success in facing my fear and letting go and letting God, I can look back on that and say, this has worked for me in the past. I can do it again. I can do it now. And one last thing, turning it over doesn't mean I don't care. You know, I've sometimes thought, well, turning it over just means saying, that ain't my job. You know, this isn't mine. I'm giving it away. I'm going to let somebody else deal with this. It's more for me now that I do care. I care enough to bring God in and to help me with this. You know, if I'm really praying about somebody or something or a situation that I'm struggling with, that means I really care about it enough to ask God for help. And I think with that, I'm going to say thank you.
Thank you, Marty. I did go to that hospital that guy sent me to, and on Saturday nights there they have a speaker meeting, and worthless information. It was started by Dr. Paul, and it was a pretty big meeting, and the leader of the second Saturday night I was there was a guy that I thought was an old-timer. He had 32 years at the time, and I still think they are an old-timer. And anyway, he closed with, take our hand and go with us, and your wildest dreams can come true here. Now, if that ain't turning it over to God in AA and marvelous things happen, I don't know what is. And by sobriety, Marty's the youngest, then me, and then John.
My name's John Foley. I'm an alcoholic. Wow, what a crowd. If you're new to Alcoholics Anonymous, welcome. When I first arrived here, they said, stay here and good things will happen to you. And, you know, coming up on 34 years, and here I am sharing at the International Conference. That's quite an honor. And if I'd have known 34 years ago that I'd be here tonight, I would have taken better notes. My sobriety date is February 7th, 1977. It's not to impress you. It's just to let you know I've got one, a sobriety date. My home group is the Badger Group. There's a pretty good sampling of them here today. We meet in Brookfield, Wisconsin. Thursday nights, we have a beginner's class at 6:30 in the main meeting is at 8 o'clock, and we have the first Thursday of the month, we talk on a step, then a tradition on the second, then we have an open speaker meeting, and then we have the topic meetings last Thursday of the month. So if you're ever in the Milwaukee area, stop up. We'll fit you in. Just don't show all up at once, though. It's really an honor to be here, really. You know, I got called to my name could be submitted to GSO, and I thought it was the day after Christmas, and I thought, wow, what an honor. And, you know, he explained to me, your name goes in the hat, and it comes out, and if you're the lucky one, you're lucky, you know. Well, in the middle of March, I got a letter from GSO. I go out to the mailbox, and I'm bringing it in. I look at it, and, you know, it's the type of alcoholic mind I've got. I'm walking into the house up the driveway, and I'm thinking, I wonder if they send out rejection letters. But I'm happy to be here, and I'm happy you're all here. Turning it over, you know, was a very, very difficult. I when I was new, they would say, turn it over, you know. And you think an Irish Catholic raised in the Catholic Church and went to 12 years of Catholic education would have some kind of clue about God or a higher power. But I was clueless. You know, see, I was such a self-centered drunk that it was all about me and did not do for others. And I came here and my first sponsor, you know, he made me stay on the first two steps a long time because I could not surrender in that first step and get completely honest with my innermost self. I could comply and say what I, you know, what I thought you wanted to hear and sound good, but I didn't and couldn't surrender. And I had a closed mind. It took a long time to find and a lot of writing and self-evaluation and talking and reading that big book with my sponsor that slowly but surely a little willingness showed up, which is an action. And I was not an action-orientated person. I'd like to live on my laurels. Growing up, I was a moocher and stealer, heck. Going through college, I cheated my way through. You know, it took me 7 years to do it, but you know, I finally got it down right. And same with jobs. You know, I was just a moocher. And for me to get into action and take direction was very foreign to me. But, you know, on February 7th, when I woke up in a hospital after a blackout and they're waiting to surgically put me back together, and you're wondering, how did you get here and what happened? And the pieces had to be put back together. And people who I thought I had fooled all my life start praying into my room. And they call it an intervention now, but they were telling me things that I thought I'd hit real well. That's where my journey started. You know, I can remember vividly a little bit about the surrender process and the willingness was when a nurse came to me and I was sitting on my bed and I was in the orthopedic ward and they were going to roll me down to the treatment center because I had nowhere else to go. And I thought, well, if I went into treatment for 30 days, it would give me somewhere to figure my next move. And I was sitting on the bed and I was crying. I was 34 years old and I was crying like a little boy. And they say, I've heard it said, and I believe it, that when you start drinking, you stop growing emotionally. And I was like a little boy sitting on that bed crying for the fear of not knowing where I was going and what was going to happen because I didn't have the tool of my living experience, alcohol, to walk with me. And a nurse walks up to me and she says, Mr. She called me Mr. And I was like a little boy. She said, Mr. Foley, what's the matter? And what do you say when someone asks you that and you're scared? And nothing, right? And I said, nothing. And she looks at me, she says, no one sits on a bed and cries over nothing. Are you in pain? Because they had put my leg was waiting to be put in a cast. It was in a splint yet. And she said, are you in pain? And little did she know I was in pain. But I said, no, it wasn't physical pain. It was emotional pain. And she said, you know, and I got a little bit honest, and I said, I'm scared because I'm going down to the treatment center, which is in the basement of the hospital at the time, and I'm scared. And she said, did you ever think of asking God to walk with you? And I said, no, and I just said a little prayer, God, walk with me. You know, and 5 years later, that thought came back, that the moment of clarity came, remembering that conversation with that lady. I went back looking for her to thank her, and nobody could remember her or had no recollection. I knew her name was Chris, and no recollection of who she was or where she was today. And that gave me a thought, well, she was an angel in my life because she started me on a little bit of a journey. And that's where a little bit of willingness entered into my life. But I battled it. I don't know about you guys, but I fight it. I want to take it back. I want to be in control. I don't want to be a weakling. That's what it meant to me. I was growing up, you know, little boys don't cry. You don't show any feelings or emotions. Well, now I can, because I learned to let it go and turn it over. You know, I'll share a little story about 5 years ago. It was my birthday, and my son and daughters. I have three daughters, a son, two granddaughters and a grandson, and an ex-wife. I used to have a cat. But she died last year. Some of you guys heard this one, but I'll tell you this one. It's goofy. She died. She was 22 years old. And she used to, when I'd pray in the morning, I'd get on my knees and she'd jump up on the bed and wait for me to pick her up when I was done on my knees. And one morning she didn't come over and jump up on the bed. So I go in and there she's laying in her chair, passed away in her sleep during the night. So I pick her up and I'm crying, feeling some emotions of loss of love. And did you ever see the movie 28 Days? that last scene, the guy standing with the dead plant and the dog. You know, they said, you know, don't get involved for a year and keep a plant alive and an animal. And there he is trying, you know, and he's standing there and he says, please make it live. I'll never get laid, you know. And I immediately go water my orchids. Geez, I'll never get lucky, you know. That's how I can go from here to there in an instant, 1 second, a heartbeat. How I can change and want to get back in control. But anyways, I was with my kids at my birthday at this water park, and I thought it'd be a great idea to take my 8-year-old and get her some popcorn. I take her over, and we're gone about 10 or 15 minutes, and my daughter is livid. She's, where have you been, Haley? I was just about ready to have the lifeguards empty the pool. Because she didn't know where she was. And she said, well, Grandpa said he'd get me some popcorn. She said, I don't care. You sit down for 15 minutes. And I'm standing there. Oh, my goodness. It's my fault. You know? So I go over to Kelly and I said, Kelly, I think that's my fault. I should have told you that we were going to go get some popcorn. She says, yeah, then maybe you should sit down for 15 minutes. And that's an example of, yeah, during the day, I have to take a time out, sit down out on the bench and regroup. Because I think I'm getting in control. Everything's going well, but it's not. You know, I think I'm in control. I took it back and, you know, it's not going good. I have to regroup. I have to say my prayers, call my sponsor, call one of my sponsees. I had another example where I fell off my roof cleaning my gutters. And I made the mistake of telling my daughter. So she sent my son-in-law over and he took my ladder away. And And in the morning, I go out and I have do my readings, have my coffee, and do a little meditating, enjoy the morning. And I'm out there on a Saturday morning, I'm doing my readings, and I look over, and there's my 88-year-old neighbor climbing his ladder, going up to blow his leaves off. And I think, what the heck, why can't I do that? And I'm working, you know, the resentment. My son-in-law's a jerk, not thinking of, hey, he wants to help me. He's willing to do it, but I have to be in control. And just then the phone rings, and one of the guys I sponsor calls me, and I'm a little testy. And he says, did I catch you at a bad time? I said, well, here's the deal. I said, I'm standing here without my ladder and watching my 88-year-old neighbor climb up and hold the, or go, 88-year-old neighbor go up and blow the leaves off his roof, and I'm very perturbed at my son-in-law. And he, little silence on the line, and he said, you know, can I say something? Sure. He says, you know what you would tell me? What? Go over there and hold the ladder for him. That's how it works. You know, I was sharing, you know, with someone the other day about doing for others and trying to be in control. And, you know, there's been times during my sobriety where there's been divorce, there's been death, there's been job loss, many things where I didn't have to drink over it because I learned how to seek God and not play God. And there's a big difference, you know. When I play God, I cause damage. There went a period through in my sobriety where I went through that. I thought I was well and I could slack back on meetings and not do and be involved as much as I should be. And it got very costly. You know, I didn't drink, but I got very miserable, you know, and you can do that for so long and the pain gets very painful. I've been very fortunate that I've been surrounded with people that are action orientated. You know, my first sponsor, I used to call him and I'd say, "I've been thinking." And he said, No, the chapter is into action, not into thinking. And it says in the 12 and 12 somewhere that we are great thinkers. Well, that's so true. You know, you hear us saying that a mind is a terrible thing to waste. Well, I don't think too many have been wasted around here because we do a lot of thinking. But now it's constructive thinking, action thinking, trying to maintain my sobriety and keep improving and peeling back those layers of that onion of what I am, you know, and it keeps getting better, and it does, you know. I like to say it that don't get too well, you know, because it can happen that we get so busy with life. You know, my priorities are now God, Alcoholics Anonymous, and family. And when I get those screwed up, I'm getting sick, and I'm not getting well. So I hope you all have a really good conference and enjoy. And if you're, once again, if you are new and this is your first one, or if you're first in your 10 years, stay here. You know, don't keep coming back. Stay here, work the steps, and it does get better. You know, one of the guys I sponsor is here, and he called me and he's having a problem. You know, someone in the family has a health problem, but he's doing the deal, doing the praying, and he's making the phone calls, and he's in the right place. So if you think things are so terrible, look from where you came. Don't forget how terrible it was. So thank you.
Thank you, John. I was still in that hospital. And in that hospital, they make you write the first four steps of the program, Alcoholics Anonymous. And I lumped 2 and 3 together, said I was going to use AA as my higher power. I wasn't ready to talk to God, thank you. And then I went on to do some more writing. And then I found myself in a chapel in that hospital, from all that stuff that I was writing, and it was hitting me on my knees talking to God. And I remember I asked him to take my will in life because I seen what a wreck I'd made of it, and to take him and run him for me and to relieve me of my obsession for alcohol, because I had a terrible thirst. I was one of these guys, if I wasn't drinking, I was thinking about drinking. God answers prayers. About 11 years before that, I had a wife that kicked me out for eating crackers in bed. And she also told me I'd never lay eyes on my children again as long as I lived. And up until that point, about 11 years, I hadn't. And I went back into where we was at in the hospital, and for some reason I called my wife, That was back when call waiting and call forwarding and all that stuff first come out, and I had it. And she said, "Just a minute, there's a call coming in." Now, this is about a half an hour after I asked God to run my life. It was my daughter calling me from Sacramento, California, who I hadn't heard from in 11 years. I'd done everything under my power to get them back in my life. Just a coincidence. But I've been talking to God on a regular basis ever since, thank you. And Annie has been sober a long time.
Hello, everybody. My name is Annie, and I'm a very grateful alcoholic. And talking about miracle, oh, God. I want to thank Rick and the General Service Committee for asking me to come and share my experience, strength, and hope. I have the three things that's a requirement. That's my home group. It's 9604. Oh, I got them out there. Huh? Yeah, they out there. My sobriety date is March 8, 1968. We all clapping to God. And I still have a sponsor, too. I'm not sponsored myself, not today. Turning it over. God. That was real hard for me. I think that's hard for all of us. Yeah, turning it over. Shit, I don't want to turn nothing over. Surrender. Oh. Okay, thank you. Surrender. Is that okay? Thank you. Surrender. Step three. You know, all of that, you know. Well, before I got here, I'm also an alcoholic musician, and I played for the church for many, many years drunk. And I used to play those songs, Turning It Over, I Surrender All. You would think I'd have been and got this like fast. I wore wigs that I didn't nail down. I failed to nail down. And, I shouted a lot, too. So, therefore, you know, I was just a mess. I was lost. You know, so, therefore, I didn't know how to use those tools. I didn't know how. The only way I knew how to turn it over was to continue to drink and continue to surrender. The only way I knew how, and that was to keep on drinking. I came from the no way out. That means that, yeah, Alcoholics Anonymous was born. Congratulations to Alcoholics Anonymous, too. 75 years. It's a long time, but look what it has done. Millions and millions of people stand sober. Yep. Okay, we're going to play today, huh? June 10th, 1935. I also celebrated a natal birthday yesterday, July 1st. 1938, so 3 years after Alcoholics Anonymous was born, I was breaking through and y'all was getting ready for me. Here she comes. We got to be here for her. Spiritually, I didn't realize that at the time. I was born in the state of Little Rock, Arkansas. I'm the oldest of four children, born by a midwife. And I just didn't know, you know, I had a lot of problems, and one of them was turning it over. I just didn't know, oh, God. I just didn't know how to do that, you know, and it was, I'm a control freak. I want to, you know, tell you what to do, how to do it, you know, and I know I'm a leader, but it's just that I led the kind of wrong way, you know. You can't be telling people what to do and how to do it, and get mad if they didn't do it the way I want them to do it. So therefore, my life was a mess, and I drank all the time. I told you that. And there wasn't no Alcoholics Anonymous was around, but it wasn't as informative as it is now. And there wasn't no recovery homes, no sober livings, no rehabs. So people even today ask me, well, how in the world did you stay sober if you didn't have no programs or you didn't have nobody to talk to? And I say, have you ever heard of divine intervention? I didn't think I was going to make it. I just didn't think I was going to make it. Didn't know about footprints in the sand, that something bigger and greater was carrying me and directing me to you all alone. You know, I went to this doctor and he kind of told me, I just need to treat your mind. I always wanted to know how long it's going to take for stuff to happen. So I said, well, doctor, how long is it going to take for you to treat my mind? It's funny now, but it wasn't funny then. He said, for the rest of your life, I'm going to have to treat your mind. I said, oh, Lord, that's a long time. So I see now what he means, that I have to be around people like you, get in touch with a God of my own understanding, and practice the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous. Self-will run riot is my name, you know, and I continued to drink, and then I was drinking in Watts. That was my thing. I went to school in Watts. I was raised in Watts and did a lot of stuff in Watts. And my disease of alcoholism, I did not know about that neither. I didn't know that I had a disease. And I was directed to this hospital to work, Long Beach General. And in the meantime, I didn't really want to go there because I had to take a test, and I want to still be where I'm at, where I'm working as a nurse. And you nurses know what you do. If you get honest, you know what you do with the medication. I'm not going to wake nobody up and give them a sleepy pill. They already sleep. I'm not going to wake nobody up and give them a pain pill neither. I'm the one that needs to be. Yeah, hey. So they were all asleep. So, hey, I take a couple and we all go to sleep. And that's fair. So I didn't want to go to Long Beach General because it was something. And the lady kept asking me. We used to drink together and everything. She calls me all the time. I said, thank you, God, and thank you to you for directing me to Long Beach General. Did I know I was going to get sober then? No, I didn't know that. So they didn't give me the keys to the medicine cabinet, so I'm glad of that. But I did other things. My attendance got bad. I had mothers and daddies to die every other month, and, you know, on and on and on. I went to funerals and weddings of people that I didn't know, because at least three of my addictions was going to be there. And y'all know what the addictions are. I don't have to tell you. Food, alcohol, and men. In case you forgot. And it went on like that, people. It went on like that. And I did good at work when I went to work. And, of course, they called me in the office and wanted to fire me and the whole works and the whole works. And that's what I wanted them to do, fire me. Because drunks don't really work. Alcoholics don't work. They may work for a minute, but 2 years was the limit. I could not work past 2 years until I got to Long Beach General. And would you know, they asked me to work with alcoholics. I didn't go ask them, could I work with alcoholics? They said, we need you to work with alcoholics. I didn't want to work with y'all. I didn't want to be bothered. I was still drinking when I landed at Long Beach General. So I went to try to suppress those feelings. When I got off, I went to the liquor store, the dope house. Then I called up my man. I said, I'm going to be whacked out because I can't make no decisions. Wouldn't you know I couldn't get drunk? And I heard a little voice say, you going to do this? You going to do this? And sure enough, I told the nurses I will work with the drunks and alcoholics. And I'm still working with them almost 44 years later. I was working with y'all while I was still getting drunk. Because it's one, it's Bill W. and Dr. Bob that let us know one drunk, one addict, and one nut helping each other. And that's what it's all about. That's what it's all about. I'm still having problems turning it over, though. March 8, 1968, God directed me to you people. I'm forever grateful. They told us to keep coming back. They didn't tell us to stay because they told us that we may not be able to stay, but you can certainly keep coming back. And that's what I've been able to do. If I ain't did nothing else, I've been able to keep coming back these 42 and a half years that I've been around here. Now, I didn't get the sponsor. I sponsored myself. Now, it's a lot of people in here, and I always say this. I sponsored myself. I'm getting honest. Most of y'all in here is sponsoring yourself. I know y'all don't want to hear that, but it's true. I sponsored myself for about 2.5 years, and then finally I got my first sponsor. And she took me through the book and the steps. And sometimes you still want to sponsor yourself, even with a sponsor. Now I'm getting honest with that, too. But it was just so hard. I was scared of the steps. I was scared to find out who I really am and what I really am. And it was, so I just said, well, I'll turn over step one and I'll skip all that other stuff and I'll turn over step 12 and I'll turn over step 13. It's not up there. I tried to make it be up there, but it ain't up there, never will be up there, and I don't worry about it now because I do all 12. I have to do all 12 now. And I heard somebody talk about crazy. You don't have to drink. You don't have to use. You can just flip out in here. And that's what happened to me because I refused to do what you people suggest. And I don't suggest you do that. It's much easier to follow instructions of your sponsor or the people around here. Now I see that. You know, I see now I have to turn it over not just 1 to 2 times. Some people say, well, I did the steps once. No, we got to keep doing. When you finish 12, you go back to 1. I have to keep doing this. I have to keep turning it over. Not just the alcohol and the drugs. There's a whole lot of stuff I didn't want to turn over. Chuck C. said it all the time at 9604. You got to surrender. And you can imagine what I was doing back in the back. Cursing him out in my thinking. He said, you either surrender, walked away from the program with his cane, you either surrender or you die. And that's true. I'm talking about dying in the rooms. I ain't talking about dying out there. You die in here when you don't keep doing what you're supposed to do. I said, okay, all right. So that's where I'm at today, people. I have to keep turning over. It wasn't easy, though. I told you I went through the craziness. I don't want that no more. So I don't want to be a dry drunk. I don't want to be untreated alcoholism. I do not want that today. So since I don't want that, I'm going to have to do what I suggest you to do. And that's do the 12 steps, 12 traditions, 12 concepts, work with others, carry the message. I'm on the speaker's list. I've been on the speaker's list. My sponsor say, you got to give it away to keep it. I said, no, I don't want to. I could talk about you all day and all night. But when I get up here, I got to talk about me. She said, how old you think those people was that came and brought the message to you? The Honeycutt brothers. I said, oh, they had about 4 or 5 years. She said, see? They had more time than you. You just got 10 years. I've been on the speaker's list for 42 years. For 32 years, I'm sorry. Working with others. I've been doing that before I even came to you people. It works, people, when you work it. I've had some health problems the last few years. You know, I know that God answers prayers. But see, sometimes we want to know what, how he going to answer. We want to tell him how to do it. Just pray and turn it over and let it go. But we want to pray, figure out, like you said, figure out how he going to do it. That's hard work. You know, praying and turn it over, then you want to figure out how he's going to do it, and you don't know how he's going to do it, but he's going to do it. That's the thing about it. He's going to do it his way. So when I pray today, I may get an answer back no. I may get an answer back yes. I may get an answer back wait. And not yet. And I see, I used to, when I get answers like no, I used to turn it around where he said no, but I'm going on it. You know how we go on anyway. Then we pay the consequences. And is there consequences? Yes, it is. So I told her no. She's going to do it her way. Okay. He knows how to get your attention. I remember a few times when I was doing that untreated alcoholism, I went as far as told God to move over. Let me drive, son. And he didn't like that. I said, get in the back seat or get your out of the car. I'm really gone now. And he said it loud enough for me to hear it. Do she think she can run her life? I'm God. We will see who's going to win. And before that day was over, I had to go back and pray. Because I hit my bottom. In sobriety. Just in case you don't know if you can hit bottoms in sobriety, yes, you can. Spiritually bankrupt. In sobriety. I'm grateful that he didn't let me drink or use or do something real crazy, but he also directed me to Augustus F. Hawkins Mental Health for me to get in touch with other areas of my life. Keep turning it over. I'm very grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous for showing me the way to live, because I never knew how to live, and especially with unsolved problems. I still call my sponsor, and it's okay to change sponsors. I've had to change sponsors. It's okay to do what you have to do. I like the way Jerome S. says it. We're all different, but find a program within a program that fits you and go on with your life one day at a time. How much time I get out on? Oh, okay. Oh, he said okay. But it works, people. I mean, I've had my ups and downs around here because I still wanted to do what I wanted to do, but I still have to watch it. I'm not doing it my way as much. I'm not doing it my way as much. Now, I'm not perfect, but I'm doing it less. I'm letting go and letting God. See, I wanted to turn over what I wanted to turn over in departments. God, you can have this, but I'm going to hang on to this. You can have this, but I'm going to hang on to this. And that don't work neither. He wants it all. You know, he wants everything, not just with alcohol or drugs. I just thought it was just that. But it's all that other stuff and things that we want to hang on to. I have to turn that over to. I have to turn people, places, and things and situations over. I have to turn everything that has to do with my life over. 9 years ago, I went through a health situation. I had colon cancer. And what I've been doing is just, I've been just praying and letting go and letting God. And what I do, because it's a process. And of course you flip when you get a diagnosis from the doctor. I mean, you know, we're still human. And everybody was putting me in the grave, and this was almost 9 years ago, September 1st. And I just knew I wasn't going to make it. But then I got to looking back. And God says, look at what I've already done for you. when it wasn't no programs and nothing, and I said that if God can deliver me from the disease of alcoholism, drug addiction, and mental illness, He could deliver me and all that stuff. That'll take too long to name, y'all know that. He can deliver me from cancer, and He did. He did. I believe that He could do that, and He did. Cancer came out benign 9 years ago. Yeah, it did. Now that ain't it. Now that ain't all. I mean, I realize that I'm going to go through challenges. I'm going to go through challenges. I'm going to go through ups and downs. But I just don't drink and I don't use and I pray more and I turn things over. 6 months ago, I went through breast cancer. I got diagnosed with breast cancer. And I flipped again. Then I said that same prayer. If He can deliver me from the disease of alcoholism, drug addiction, mental illness, He can deliver me from breast cancer. And He did! The doctor said the cancer is gone. It's in remission. No chemo, no radiation. I said, okay, before I said I was going to be here. I didn't know if I was going to be here or not, but I said, I'll be here. And then I had the surgery afterwards. So all of this is, I look at this like predestined, that I may not have known what was going to happen, but God in my own understanding knew that it was my time to come here and share. And here I am, people. 72 years old I made yesterday. I still work. I'm going to close it now, and I'm going to close it with this. Since before I got here, it was this song I used to play in the church, Amazing Grace, How Sweet It Sounds, that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now I'm found. I was blind, but now I see. Martin Luther King shares something with us. Since I've been here, I've been to the mountaintop, and I'm living in the promises of this land. I may not get there when you all get there, but I guarantee you and I promise you, if you keep coming back, you will get to the other side. Free at last. Free at last. Thank God Almighty, I'm free at last. Thank you.
Thank you, Annie. So early in sobriety, I learned that turning it over gets amazing and marvelous results. So why do I keep wanting to do it my way? I also would like to thank some people. I have a whole bunch of friends from Kansas that are here. I'd like to thank them. My best friend's here. My honey's here. She supports me in Alcoholics Anonymous. My home group is the Martin Street Group. Meets on Monday and Tuesday nights in Salina. Want to thank them. I want to absolutely thank Rick from GSO. He called me and said, did you get my email? And I said, no. He said, well, you'd like to lead a meeting at the International Convention. And after I picked myself up off the floor... Oh, yeah. What an honor. Let's see.